Live from the In the Room studios located in the NetCarrier and Cloud, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Hey, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Compton After Dark right here on the VOC Nation Worldwide. I'm Dean Compton. Thanks for tuning in tonight, a Sunday night, 11:30 p.m. You know it means Compton After Dark, and I have had one hellacious week, just crazy week. Lots of stuff going on, lots of stuff going up, lots of stuff going down. But one thing that stays constant is Ryan Mays, always on the show, right here with me, my good friend. How are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good, Matt. How's it going? Working those overtime hours.
Oh, so stupid. It's just, you know, you go to work and you're just, yeah. Not here. Obviously, I love doing this with the VOC Nation. I love having guests like Jason Caskey tonight. But in my day job, whew, just been a long week, shorthanded. Man, you know, like I tell everybody time and time again down here in the South, you know, you can't win for losing.
Son,
what'd you say?
I said you win, you get that paycheck.
You know, I tell people always say that when you tell them you're going to work some overtime. They're like, "Oh, I'm going to work overtime." They're like, "Well, you'll be happy when you get paid." I'm like, that money's already spent, most likely. Rich people give you money, and you just turn around and give it right back to them. That's all that happens. That's all that ever happens with your paycheck, people. I know you have grander designs than that, and I hate to be so cynical right off the bat, but that's just how it is.
What a buzzkill.
Well, you have to have a real good buzz first, you know? I mean, and I ain't even got one of those tonight. Come on, man. What's that about? Where's my buzz?
The buzz is coming.
I can't hear anything at the moment, so I don't know what's going on with the technical side of things right here. But hope you guys are hearing me. Ryan, are you still there?
Yeah, man, I'm hearing you. I guess you just can't hear me.
Yeah, I heard you that time. That's how it works with the live radio, folks. Anything that can go wrong will. For real, like right when the theme song hit, I accidentally unplugged my headphones. Then just now, all of a sudden, I couldn't hear anything. Couldn't hear whatever you said the super buzz was. I'm hoping it was Jason Caskey here to talk about Trial and Arrow and Holy Terror, a little pro wrestling tonight. But
it was.
I know it was. And I couldn't hear anything. And then, like, when I start messing with my headphones to try and get them working, knock over the goddamn microphone. Why are the radio gods frowning upon me tonight? Why are the baseball gods so mad at me? Kansas City Royals falling off the cliff.
Man, that sucks, dude. I haven't even been watching the game, but I've just been watching you on Twitter. I mean, it's a heartbreaker.
Just shake your head, man. That's all you can do is just shake your head. But we do have a fantastic show tonight. Jason Caskey is on the line. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back right with him. You want to be a part of this tonight, 855-VOC Radio, 855-862-7234, ComptonAfterDark@gmail.com, or you can reach us over on Facebook, facebook.com/ComptonAfterDark. Sean Clancy sent us messages last week that away because he's fancy, he's hip, he's with it, just like our guest Jason Caskey tonight, talking to Charlton Arrow, talking Vengeance Squad, talking Holy Terror, talking about everything under the sun. You can talk with them if you call in, but you can't talk with them right now because this is a commercial break.
Live from the In the Room studios located in the NetCarrier and Cloud, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Hey, everyone, it is your favorite knockout, Mickey James, and you're listening to the VOC Nation.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Thanks for coming on down. It's Save Wrestling the Podcast and the Business Making Towns. I am your award-winning hostess with the mostest, Shelly Funtime Martinez, and she is my co-host, Dazzling Danielle.
Woo! Hello out there.
And together we are the Martinez Girls. You finally did it. And you can join us here Monday, new time, 6 p.m. Eastern on the VOC Nation as we save wrestling together, Danielle. Fighting
Woo!
Crime.
Hey guys, Brady Hicks here, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributing writer and the host of In the Room, thebradyhicks.com, and for the first time ever, vocnation.com. So happy to be part of the family. Join us each and every Tuesday night, 9, 8 Central, vocnation.com, thebradyhicks.com, myself, DJ, Derek McDonald, Ray Bogus, Anthony Sarlo, Kathy Fitz, breaking down all that's going on in wrestling today, and so much more.
Hey, it's me, the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. Netcarrier has many great products and services to increase your bottom line. Be sure to ask your Netcarrier representative about our hosted PBX. Call Netcarrier today for a free analysis of your phone bills. 877-255-7733. That's right, 877-255-7733. Call now.
The second building that was hit by the plane has just completely collapsed. The entire building has just collapsed as if a demolition team set off. When you see the old demolitions of these old buildings, it pulled it down on itself and it is not...
We are live with Carmine Confidential.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Like everyone else, you were born into bondage. Born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind.
Listen to Carmine Confidential. Weekdays at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. VOC Nation Radio Network.
The most polarizing personalities worldwide. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Looking for a DJ? Looking for someone to host your event? Then look no further. Philadelphia's hottest DJ and host, The Voice of Choice. The Voice of Choice has hosted the hottest events in the tri-state area. Book The Voice of Choice for all your karaoke, conventions, and parties. Go to www.vocnation.com for more information or email The Voice of Choice at voc@vocnation.com.
Are you getting lost in the cloud? Is technology moving too fast for you? Find your way at netcarrier.com. Ride the NCloud and soar above your competition.
This is Buggy Nova, your Candyland princess, and I want everyone to know that I love VOCNation.com.
Hey, how's it going? This is Amy Dumas, but you may know me as Lita. You're listening to the VOC Nation.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us through the break. I'm Dean Compton. You're listening to Compton After Dark live on the VOC Nation. You know the VOC Nation's worldwide. You know we got a lot of great shows Tuesday nights in the room with Brady Hicks. You know we got Tommy Fierro's Who's Slamming Who. You know we got Hangar 18 for conservative political talk on the weekends. But tonight, it's Compton After Dark. That means the finest in comic books and professional wrestling. That means... sometimes we're able to amalgamate those worlds in a most delightful and peculiar way. And tonight, that means Jason Caskey, the devil of Des Moines himself, coming back to visit with us on Compton After Dark again. Thanks so much for being here tonight, Jason.
Well, thank you, Dean, for letting me come back. It's always fun to listen and fun to be on the show.
And it's always a pleasure, never a chore, to have somebody just so debonair and talented such as yourself, and such a class act as well, you know, to grace the airwaves, if you will. I know they're not really airwaves, folks. I know this is internet radio. You ain't got to tell me, but that's just what we're going to say, Jason. Grace the airwaves with us tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So I want to start by, you know, a couple weeks ago you were supposed to have made it, and I know you ran into a debacle, to say the least, and we appreciate you being able to reschedule so soon. But Mort Todd wound up letting the cat out of the bag that night that your Holy Terror is about to get a brand-new printing, brand-new trade paperback that he's going to put out, I guess, through Comic Mix?
Yeah.
Or Comic Fix.
Yeah, through Mort's company, Comic Fix. We had talked about initially when we decided to do to bring the Holy Terror back and do it with Mort, that eventually, you know, we would, once the first two issues originally years ago came out through Image, and we kind of had to put the book on hiatus before we got it finished, because the artist and co-creator, Phil Hester, he got like a really, really big gig, and he like felt bad. He's like, well, I'll get it done, you know, and I said, it's cool, man, just, and, you know, it was, you know, he felt bad as my pal that, you know, he kind of had to put it on hold, but, you know, he was doing Green Arrow with Kevin Smith, and I, you know, said, dude, I dropped this comic to write Green Arrow, so don't worry about it.
So, that's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to work with Kevin Smith, too.
Yeah, and it was like a big, it like opened up like a whole new phase in his career, and, you know, I was, you know, nothing but happy for him, and I knew we would get it done eventually, and we've got like a group of our friends that are all like really talented, like comic book writers and artists that helped out throughout the entire thing. And from like the beginning when we first did it, and then when we brought it back with Mort, they helped, you know, finish up the things here and there. We actually added some additional pages to what was the third issue to kind of flesh out the story a little more. And two of my buddies helped Phil laid them out, and then my two friends, Aaron Gillespie and Brooke Turner, and they're both wicked talented artists, and Aaron's also a tremendous writer. He writes comics for Dynamite right now. They, like, you know, took, you know, shared their time and their talent, and, you know, helped Phil and I finish out that third issue, and Mort put it out and recolored the whole thing and just made it gorgeous. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what the people think of the trade that we're going to put out. So since Mort kind of let the cat out of the bag, which was fine, you know, Mort and I had talked about we were going to say something on your show. I'm just going to say that another friend of the show and fellow Arrowhead, Roger McKenzie, I exchanged some messages with him earlier this past week, and he's going to write an introduction for us. So,
oh, that sounds
I think
terrific!
That's
big wrestling fan.
Yeah, that's what's, you know, and that's kind of like the you know, it's kind of the cool thing that, you know, 30 years ago I was like, you know, a kid reading comics. I was reading comics, you know, written by Roger McKenzie, and here I am all these years later, and, you know. He's a, you know, great guy I love talking to, and he, you know, he's going to write an introduction for my comics, so you can't get any cooler than that.
Absolutely not. I feel the same way. I mean, Roger McKenzie's the guy who got me to like Daredevil. So then that was an impressive feat, because I'm such a Punisher fan. I eschewed anything even remotely related to old Hornhead, but he wrote a story that made me, you know, I had to fall in love with the character thanks to how he was presented. And Roger's also a class act and easy to talk to. And if you ever get over to the Charlton Arrow Facebook page, he will be more than happy to exchange a few barbs with you, as he and I have done. And he is a good friend of the show, just like you. When do you think people are going to be able to get that trade?
Mort and I haven't made any, like, you know, set deadline or anything. We've got a few little details to work out. I'm hoping sometime after the first of the year. You know, and a lot of that depends on, you know, the whole Charlton Neo movement is just blowing up so much. And, you know, Mort's a busy guy. He's, you know, besides his comic stuff, he, you know, does advertising and animation. And, you know, he's always got some new wacky adventure that he's involved with. That is always neat to see what he's doing next. But I'm sure sometime after, you know, soon after the first of the year, we'll have that out there. So,
just in time for WrestleMania shopping season.
That's right, for Valentine's Day.
Right. Get your honey the holy terror. And you're right about Mort. I mean, he must have like 36,112 projects going on at any given time. I'm pretty sure he gets 30 hours in his days.
Yeah, the guy must get 30 hours in his day. I remember I met Mort, actually. This goes back in ancient history. I met Mort through MySpace. That
oh wow,
yeah,
2007.
I had ordered some comics from him for his series Sadistic, Diabolical Super Criminal. I ordered some of those books, and they're like insane. And anyone that has read those, you know, has to agree. And if you got the first two issues of Holy Terror had little previews of some sadistic stories, and which I thought was awesome. And anyway, I'd ordered some of those sadistic books from him, and, you know, we got to be like online friends, and ended up like kind of reconnecting on Facebook, and he started posting things that he had done in the past, and some of it was some of his, yet another one of his many side projects he has going on. He posted some of his stuff from Ace Comics. Are you familiar with those at all? Basically, like Ace
that's
Comics.
What he, that's what he forwards like the face through, right?
Yeah, what is the face and the Skyman and there was
Rod.
A guy. Yeah, and the Hot Rod comics that Ron Franz, who was the publisher behind Ace Comics. Actually, this goes into a weird segue into my childhood, but bear with me.
Hey, no worries.
I spent a summer one year, spent a couple weeks with an aunt and uncle in Oklahoma, and one of their daughters, her father-in-law owned at one time had owned like a big hobby, like trains and baseball cards and comic book store, and he was involved in a new black and white comic book company. This was back, you know, in the mid 80s during the big black and white boom. And I got to spend the afternoon with the guy because, you know, I was like, I don't know, 15, and, you know, he knew I liked comics, and you know, he sat me down with some of their books and was explaining to me how like comics are made and stuff, and gave me like, you know, almost everything they'd put out at the time, just gave me copies of it, and was like one of the big, like, inspiring things about, like, yeah, I want to do comics. And one of those comics was Skyman, written by Mort Todd. And
oh,
I remember,
wow.
You know, and then years later, I told Mort, I'm like, yeah, like, I had this experience with this guy that, you know, was putting out, somehow associated with Ace Comics and stuff, and, you know, it was one of your comics that inspired me. It's like, oh, that's crazy. I'm like, yeah, I know. And then, like, the other cool thing was this guy had his whole back stock of his old shop in his basement, and then when he got done, he, like, just told me to go downstairs and just, like, raid it and take whatever I wanted. And so, like, I, like, ended up, when I flew back home, like, at the end of the week, I had to borrow another bag from my uncle to, like, take home these, like, you know, 200 comics I got. So,
wow.
But it's just kind of weird. It's kind of weird how, like, light. What?
Where was this guy when I was a teenager? I want to just go down and pick out some comic books.
Yeah, well, it was a pretty neat experience, and I mean, I've talked to Ron Franz since then about this gentleman, and you know, he kind of, you know, filled in some gaps of, you know, how he knew this guy, and you know, and just kind of the weirdness that, you know, 30 years later, I'm, you know, getting to do comics with this guy, that with this Mortog guy that, you know, created the comics that inspired me. So
it's funny to me too to talk to him so much, because I was a huge Cracked fan when I was very young, like 7 and 8, really too young probably to have been reading Cracked, but you know, I was always a little precocious and certainly you know, a little ahead of my time, as evidenced by the greatness that is Compton After Dark, everyone. But it's weird to me to be able to talk to him and be like, wow, I've been reading your stuff basically my whole life.
Yeah, it's kind of cool how the world works sometimes. I remember, like, you know, sporadically reading, you know, those Cracks, you know, as I was a kid. And then I spent a summer, I was laid up with a broken leg, and people would just bring me, you know, like family would just like stop somewhere and like bring me comics to read in the hospital.
Right.
And so I was getting all kinds of, you know, 3 copies of some things and just don't say anything to anybody. But then I was getting a lot of Cracked from those era. And, you know, I'd looked at Cracked here and there, but, you know, as a kid, I really didn't differentiate between it and Mad quite so much. And but then I was getting those Cracks, and like there was this, you know, there was just weird shit at them, and like, oh. You know, and then you know, I've like come to, you know, find out years later that was some of Mort's weird shit, and I mean weird shit in the nicest possible way, that you know, that's made it cool. So
right, it was completely, you know, it was like Monty Python says, and now for something completely different. Because I would read Mad too, but I gravitated towards the Cracks, and I think it's because, you know, like you said, they were, you know, there was some crazy shit in them, and I enjoyed the off kilter view put forth by them. You know, Mad certainly, when you think about it, as far as its satire and its scathing social wit, had its heyday, but it probably wasn't at the same time when Mort Todd was running Cracked, if for no other reason. Then Mort Todd was like, you know, 23, 24 when he took over, and he had his finger right on the pulse, you know? Like, he was so young, he knew exactly what people 14 to 25 wanted, you know, because he was one of them. And apparently what some 7-year-old wanted.
Yeah, and it was just, you know, by that time, you know, by like the mid-80s, Mad had been around for like 30 years, and... And as I say this, I don't mean to just be disparaging to anybody, but, you know, by that time, you know, it's a bunch of, like, middle-aged guys that are just like, okay, what's the hot TV show right now? Okay, we'll
right,
do a
right.
Cheers parody. And, you know, it was kind of very formulaic, and I mean, that's not to say it wasn't, you know, entertaining, and, you know, you knew what you were getting, and, you know, Cracked kind of followed that same sort of mold that, you know, they kind of just... plugged away, but, you know, just, you know, you'll get someone like, you know, some punk kid like Mort Todd that comes in and kind of does something different. It really kind of makes you notice it. And so, yeah, that's kind of my weird roundabout way of getting to know Mort Todd was from comics from 30 years ago.
Yeah, I had to screen a call, so I had to go away for a moment.
Oh,
that's one of the things
okay.
That sucks about. No, that's one of the things that sucks about this is like if I have to screen a call, I lose track of whatever's going on and can't hear anything except the caller. But we will get to Jerome in just a couple moments. What I was going to say in response, you know, I mean, when it came to Mad to at that time to me, I guess, it was safe because it was an institution. Like you said, by that time, it had been around 30 years or so, and it was firmly entrenched. You know, obviously it wasn't as safe as, say, you know, Disney or even, you know, CBS or what have you, but it was one of those American institutions, Coca-Cola, Superman, Mad Magazine. You know, and I mean, there was something more dangerous about cracks at the time.
Yeah.
And that's not
to
say, like
you
said, that it wasn't entertaining or it wasn't good, but there was just, it was just, you know, it's like the difference between, you know, getting some, you know, like you said, you knew what you were going to get. So you go and get like some good fast food like Hardee's. It's going to be good, but you know what you're going to get. Conversely, you know, you could get a little steak sometimes somewhere, and it's just a little better. Both are good.
Yeah, exactly. You saying that you had to screen a call, can I tell you a quick story? Because I think you'll enjoy this.
Absolutely.
When I was in I started college late. I started in my late 20s, and I got an internship at a radio station. And because I had a cousin who was like the program director there, and it was a sports radio station, and I'm not a sports guy. And I'm not really into sports. He's like, well, but it's for a wrestling radio show. I'm like, oh yeah? He's like, yeah, it's a 2-hour show. The first hour is all like collegiate and Olympic sport wrestling, like, you know, wrestling. And
yeah, like
half,
you're in Iowa. It's very big deal there, you know, Gable University of Iowa.
Oh, yeah, like it is like collegiate wrestling, you know, quote unquote, real wrestling is like huge in Iowa. And
right.
But the second half of the show was always like professional wrestling. Like, oh, and, you know, I grew up watching and loving wrestling. And I'm enough older than you. I remember like there being, you know, our wrestling was like territorial wrestling out of Kansas City. So it was like All-Star Wrestling, and it was stars, that, you know, huge stars that were big in Kansas City, St. Louis, Des Moines, but they weren't like necessarily nationally known or international superstars. But I'd kind of gotten out of wrestling in my, you know, I liked it, you know, as a kid and a teenager, and then in my adult years, I kind of got out of it, but I got back into it from this radio show. Well, anyway, one of the things that I did on the show was, you know, once in a while I was on the air, but a lot of the time I did was like operated the board or would like screen calls, or like have to watch the dump button. And, you know, we learned like if you had someone like Brutus the Barber Beefcake, you might as well just have your hand hovering under the dump button because he just could not, you know, didn't have the freedom of speech that we enjoy here on Compton After Dark, and
exactly,
you had to watch.
Exactly.
But anyway, there was one night we had wrestler Ken Patera. If people remember Ken Patera, his gimmick, he was a wrestler in like the 70s and 80s, and he'd been an Olympic weightlifter.
Right. Eventually went to jail one of the wrestling's most famous stories.
Yeah, and that was the thing, is one of the callers called in, I want to have them ask about Ken Patera about the time him and Mr. Saito went to jail. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like writing this note, which is a big no, to show one of the hosts, don't ask him about this, like, no. And he's looking at it, can't figure out, as he asks the question. And Ken Patera went ballistic. And it, on one hand, I kind of understood, you know, like, because it is an embarrassing thing. But then another, like, they turned a wrestling angle into it. So,
right.
But
right.
It was one of those things that it was kind of scary at the time. Because, like, oh, my God, because, you know, we get fined if, you know, something gets on the air, but, you know, looking back on it was pretty funny. And the short version of the story, for anyone listening that doesn't know it, Ken Patera, this wrestler and a fellow wrestler who is a Japanese guy who wrestled as Mr. Saito, as I understood it, the one night after the matches, they stopped at a McDonald's. to get a bite to eat. But then the McDonald's was closed and they wouldn't serve them. And but they saw people inside and they got mad, so they took one of the decorative boulders that McDonald's at the time used to have in their, like in the front lawn of the restaurant, and they chucked it through the window. And then the cops got called, and they, like, fought the cops, and then ended up going to, like, jail for a year.
Apparently, they fought off, like, something like somewhere between, like, 8 and 12 law enforcement officers. You know what I mean? Like, from what I've been told is they ambushed them. One hid behind the door, and the other was on the bed. So when they came in, like, then they just jumped on them. And, you know, everybody knows that pro wrestling, the endings may be predetermined, but these guys are tough as hell. And they were able to stave these cops off for a long time. It's a funny story to us, but like you said, it has to be embarrassing and, you know, something that Ken Vitaren probably didn't want to talk about if he didn't have to.
No. And, yeah, you're absolutely right that, like, yeah, it's predetermined. But, you know, especially a lot of those old school guys, I mean, I remember here in Iowa, we have the Dan Gable Wrestling Museum that it's in Waterloo, Iowa now. And at one point, it was in a town called Newton, which was not that far from where I live. But most of the museum is dedicated to, like, you know, the history of the sport of wrestling. But then they have a professional wrestling wing. And we would cover their Hall of Fame inductions.
Right.
And it was it's the Lou Fez George Tragos Professional Hall of Wrestling, Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame, excuse me. And this was far enough back that, you know, we got to meet, like, the guys that came in, and one of them was Lou Fez. And I remember getting to meet Lou Fez, and he was, like, I don't know, 82 or 83 at the time. And I was shaking his hand, and I'm just feeling his grip and looking at his arms, and I'm thinking, this guy could freaking kill me.
Probably could. Could have beaten up a bear, even at 82. Luther is legitimate tough guy. And, you know, knowledgeable at, you know, genuine wrestling.
Well, and then, like, the crazy thing was later that night, and, you know, and he's got on, like, a suit and tie, and I'm trying to think who all was there. It was, like, Lou Fez and Vern Gagne and Harley Race and Ole Anderson and Dick Byer, the Destroyer, all these, like, golden age wrestling guys. And at one point, they have a wrestling ring in the museum. At one point, they're just screwing around, and here's, like, Lou Fez and Vern Gagne get up in the ring and start wrestling.
Wow.
You know, and these are – and they're, like, you know, and they're, like, old guys. And, you know, first – we think they're just going to screw around. No, they start wrestling. They've got on their suit and ties, and their wives are just shaking their heads, and they're just, like, laughing, throwing each other around. And, you know, it was kind of that and the resurgence of wrestling in, like, the late 90s, and, you know, getting to watch, you know, the Monday Night Wars and stuff. That's kind of what rekindled my love of wrestling. And I was describing it to somebody about, you know, I was telling them, you know, that story, and I go, that's be like just kind of getting, you know, as a kid watching wrestling and reading comics, you know, that's like getting to watch two, like, golden age superheroes just, like, screw around and, like, you know, spar, because, you know, they're larger than life.
Right.
You know, especially when you're a kid, and then just get to see them and meet them like that it was just pretty amazing.
Yeah, it would definitely be akin to seeing Captain America and Archie Shield just start screwing around and sparring.
Yeah, exactly. And it was right around – I remember it was right around the time that Jesse Ventura was running for governor of Minnesota. And, you know, Minnesota is, you know, our neighbor. And I was talking to Vern Gagne's wife, visiting with her, and I was, you know, asking her, I'm like, well, you know, what do you folks think of one of your, you know, your former wrestlers going to be, something's going to be your governor? And she just shook her head and she's like, you know, Jesse's not really that smart. And like, it was like, I was just trying to, like, make conversation with her. And it's just like, I felt like I just embarrassed her. Said, like, oh, that's too bad. Well, you know, they wanted Vern to run at one point, but he he didn't want to get a, you know, he would have had to close up business, and he didn't want to do that. I'm like, oh, okay. And just like, yeah, okay, thank you. And he kind of just went on, but that was another kind of funny moment. So,
I mean, it's a surreal moment, you know, to be around legends in the professional wrestling business like that. Just even, you know, like you said, to shake Lou Thesz's hand or meet Vern Gagne, but to see them, you know, spar a little bit and wrestle a little bit in the ring, especially, you know, that's just a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I especially like the reaction of their wives just shaking their head like, ah, this is what they do, business as usual, no big deal, those crazy kids.
Yeah.
We've got to take a call real quick. Jerome, what do you got for us tonight? Welcome to Compton After Dark.
Hello, Dean. I have a poem about Joe Staten, the creator of E-Man and Omega Man and so forth.
All right, spout it out,
Edison.
Yeah, I got you. Let's hear it.
Dear Joe, you're a true inspiration chum to all the fanboys and comic dumb. For you successfully chosen to tinker as a penciler, writer, and inker, and best work has ranged from the racy to the tame with GL and Dick Tracy. And so you started your sojourn as a comic force and rare creative source with your 1970s work on E-Man, which entertained many a Charlton fan. And later you would go on to Marvel and DC to boot, showing that you were on the right route. On to have Green Lantern Gun to bring the Metal Men in Doom Patrol a new day in the sun. Eventually, you move to First Comics as director. But then 3 years came and went, and you went back for a chance to do GL, get into war. Thank you. And goodbye.
Ah, thanks, man. That's a pretty good one. Joe Staten did do a lot of great work, especially over at Charlton. And Jason Caskey, you're involved in that with the Neo Charlton now.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing, you know, thing that I just kind of fell ass backwards into. So, you know, that's cool. And it's really amazing how this whole Charlton thing has grown so much that, you know, I remember when it was just like, you know, a handful of guys that just happened to, you know, all like Charlton comics. And, you know, I become friends with Fester Faceplant through Facebook and stuff. And, you know, we private message each other and, you know, kind of run into each other on the same, you know, fan pages and things. And, you know, he said he was thinking about starting the Charlton thing. And I'm like, yeah, if you do that, I'll be all in on that. And, you know, he did and joined it, you know, Mort got on it. And, you know, for the longest time, it was just so cool because it was one of the few sort of communities online that, you know, no one got snarky, you know, there weren't big flame wars, that people just, you know,
right,
they got along. And then it's like, just kind of like that, you know, that shared love of Charlton comics and, you know, even being willing to kind of like poke fun at them and, you know, make fun of, you know, the production values or when the comics weren't as good as they could have been. You know, that it's okay to kind of laugh at something that you love and, you know, you can still appreciate it. And even when it's not the greatest, you know, you're still entertained by it. And
exactly,
just the fact that now, I mean, it just blows me away that, you know, everything these guys have got going, you know, all the different titles they're announcing and the talent that they're coming on board, and it's just, I'm just like blown away at, you know, like, gosh, I'm in on a pretty cool party now. So
it's amazing. It really is. It's amazing just to even be peripherally involved in it. Jerome, you got anything else for us this evening?
Oh, not much. You guys were talking wrestling, which is my language. I grew up watching wrestling. I remember the angle with Ken Patera, actually, where they brought him in, and he was a recuperated con, or what do you want, an ex-convict, and O'Heenan went out there mouthing off to Pantera, and I remember the kid thinking he was going to kill Bobby Heenan because he had that bell, I think he had a bell around his neck. He's swinging around the ring, and I have never seen footage. I'm sure if you went on YouTube, you could look it up, but it was funny to watch kind of at first, but then, you know, you don't like a bad guy as a kid, but then I thought he was going to kill him. I felt horrible. And you got to remember Kent Patera's huge afro. If you remember anything about him, the waistband around his singlet and the huge afro are definitely trademarks of Kent Patera.
Yeah, definitely. He had a look that stood out.
Yeah, and I always remember that, like, babyface or heel, whether he was saying, no matter what he was saying, he always seemed to be scowling. Like, he was always very upset, it seemed. No matter what. Like, he's like, I just won the title. But I'm like, why are you mad, bro? He's a champ.
I never got to see him be successful because his WWE run was less than lusterful, and they kind of disappeared with him later on, and he turned him a bad guy again at some point. And I was looking forward to it. He's like, you know, All-American, and you hear that he's trying to do better. But like I said, that scared me as a kid. I thought he was going to kill poor Bobby Heenan.
And that's when pro wrestling's at its best, is when it gets you to suspend disbelief like that and make you, you know, completely believe 100% that what's going on in front of you is real. I appreciate the call tonight, Jerome.
Oh, no problem. And if John Cena had done that to KFED years ago, I would have been applauding that, though.
I think we all would. We got to take a quick break here. We're talking with Jason Caskey tonight. You want to be a part of it like Jerome was, 855-VOC-RADIO, 855-862-7234. You want to reach us on Facebook, facebook.com/ComptonAfterDark. ComptonAfterDark@gmail.com is the old school email address, @ComptonRadio on Twitter. I swear it takes me half the show to tell you how to contact us. But after this break, we're going to talk more Neo Charlton right here with Jason Caskey. You don't want to miss it, folks, so stick with us.
Live from the In the Room studios located in the Net Carrier and Cloud, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Hey everyone, it is your favorite knockout, Mickey James, and you're listening to the VOC Nation.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Thanks for coming on down. It's Save Wrestling, the podcast, and the business making town. I am your award-winning hostess with the mostest, Shelly Funtime Martinez, and she is my co-host, Dazzling Danielle.
Woo! Hello out there.
And together we are the Martinez Girls. You finally did it. And you can join us here Monday, new time, 6 p.m. Eastern on the VOC Nation as we save wrestling together, Danielle. Fighting crime.
Hey guys, Brady Hicks here, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributing writer and the host of In the Room, thebradyhicks.com, and for the first time ever, vocnation.com. So happy to be part of the family. Join us each and every Tuesday night, 9, 8 Central, vocnation.com, thebradyhicks.com, myself, DJ, Derek McDonald, Ray Bogus, Anthony Sarlo, Kathy Fitz, breaking down all that's going on in wrestling today, and so much more.
Hey, it's me, the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. Netcarrier has many great products and services to increase your bottom line. Be sure to ask your Netcarrier representative about our hosted PBX. Call Netcarrier today for a free analysis of your phone bills. 877-255-7733. That's right, 877-255-7733. Call now.
The second building that was hit by the plane has just completely collapsed. The entire building has just collapsed as if a demolition team set off
when you see the old demolitions of these old buildings. It pulled it down on itself, and it is not...
We are live with Carmine Confidential.
From Dallas, Texas, the Flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Like everyone else, you were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind.
Listen to Carmine Confidential, weekdays at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time, VOC Nation Radio Network.
The most polarizing personalities worldwide. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Looking for a DJ? Looking for someone to host your event? Then look no further. Philadelphia's hottest DJ and host, The Voice of Choice. The Voice of Choice has hosted the hottest events in the tri-state area. Book The Voice of Choice for all your karaoke, conventions, and parties. Go to www.vocnation.com for more information or email the Voice of Choice at voc@vocnation.com.
Are you getting lost in the cloud? Is technology moving too fast for you? Find your way at netcarrier.com. Ride the NCloud and soar above your competition.
This is Buggy Nova, your Kenny Lynn princess, and I want everyone to know that I love VOCNation.com.
Hey, how's it going? This is Amy Dumas, but you may know me as Lita. You're listening to the VOC Nation.
Welcome back to Compton After Dark. I'm Dean Compton right here on VOC Nation Worldwide. You want to be a part of the show tonight, talk to Jason Caskey. 855 VOC Radio, 855-862-7234. And we want to thank everybody out there for staying up late and listening tonight, or if you're listening to the podcast, we appreciate that too. And if you want to listen to past episodes of Compton After Dark, they are at podcast.vocnation.com. Jason, we got into talking a little bit about Neo Charlton and the Charlton Arrow webpage, and you're going to be coming up in the next issue of the Charlton Arrow. I know you're honored to be working alongside guys like, you know, Mort Todd, Paul Kupferberg, Roger McKenzie, Chuck Dixon's coming on board, you know, with the Western and action stuff. So you're right, it is exploding. But tell me a little bit about how you got to, write Vengeance Squad and what we can look forward to from you and Sandy Carruthers, right?
Yeah, Sandy, it was kind of in the beginning stages of kind of the original vision for the Charlton Arrow that Fester had initiated, where it was going to be kind of more of a traditional, you know, fanzine, where it was going to be comics and articles and things. And we were just talking, and there was a lot of talk about, what's public domain, what isn't, what can we use, and one of the things that had we came up with that probably was safe to use was the Vengeance Squad, and I'm like, oh, I'd love to do a story with that, and then Sandy just, volunteered for it, and, that's cool, and I, had been talking to him online, on the Arrow page anyway, and was looking at his stuff. I'm like, whoa, this is going to be incredible. This guy's going to, draw a story that I wrote. So,
absolutely.
It turned out it's really great. It's, by far one of my favorite things I've ever been involved with. And, I'm really looking forward to seeing what people think of it. Even in the Vengeance Squad is kind of one of those Charlton things that's obscure, even for some Charlton fans, that they maybe sort of remember it, but I think the book only ran like 5 or 6 issues.
Yeah, and, something like that.
Yeah, and it basically, like, the premise of it, it's like a, and I'm speculating at this point, but it seems like they were trying to do a comic based on a like a 1970s cop show, you know, like a Rockford Files or Canon or something like that, that it really has that vibe, that the comic really had that vibe. And,
absolutely.
Kind of how, like, their comic Yang basically was them doing Kung Fu, the David Carradine show, you know, they just kind of did their own, you know, spin on it. And that's what Vengeance Squad seemed like, because it's a Eric Red, who's like the leader of the Vengeance Squad. He's like a ex-Treasury agent that got framed and went to jail, and then he's, you know, come back. And the Candy Orr, she's the girl in the group, and she's like a ex-policewoman. And then Tulsa Coyle, who's the muscle for the group, he's a guy that's a Vietnam vet slash like boxer. So and they just, you know, go out and they're like private eyes or, you know, investigators, and they take on cases. And it's just the sort of stuff you see like on the retro TV channels now, like if you have
right,
Meet TV, it's like the sort of stuff you watch in the afternoon. And
it sort of has
stuff
a
that
mob
I really dig. So like
me.
that you know, an idea of doing a comic of that sort of story, like, really appealed to me. So I hope people enjoy it. That I really appreciated how, like, Sandy got really behind, like, what I was wanting to do, because I'm like, well, yeah, I kind of, you know, it's like a 70s cop show, but I'd like there to be bikers in it. It would be like all the old American International biker movies that, like, Peter Fonda and Jack Nicholson and Dennis Hopper made before they were big stars. And
hell
then
yeah.
Sandy just sends me back a bunch of stuff that he found for, like, research. And, you know, he sent me the pictures. He's like, is this the sort of thing you're thinking about? I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, this guy gets it. So I'm really jazzed to see it in print and to find out what, hope people enjoy it. So
I really like Vengeance Squad. And like you said, it does have that 70s cop show vibe. I mean, they're not exactly the same thing, but because of the shady nature of some of the characters, it has kind of a Mod Squad feel to me.
Oh yeah, very much so. And it's got the, and it was created by Joe Gill, who, you know, wrote, you know, damn near everything that Charlton. Yeah. And, some of the, like, the Vengeance Squad stories are just like crazy, because, like, he has them doing stuff that, you know, you would never see someone doing on TV. Like, there's one where they're going after some guy that smuggles heroin through, through Morocco or something, and he's on the French Riviera, and the way they draw him out is they just start fucking with him. They just start messing with his stuff, and like they're telling people, yeah, and if they want to know who did it, you know, tell them the Vengeance Squad did it, just to draw him out. And it's just, you know, it's kind of almost like a stream of conscience thing that, you know, you know that he didn't, that Joe Gill just like sat his ass in the chair and just wrote the damn thing, and just, it makes it just like fun. And that's kind of, you know, the way I approach my story, that, I mean, Joe Gill is awful big shoes to fill. I'm not saying at all that, you know, I'm improving upon anything, you know, but I tried to do it in the spirit of that and just kind of do my own twist on it. And, I guess we'll wait and see. Sandy, like, just, you know, like I said before, he just knocked it out of the park with the art. And, you know, Mort's colors, and, you know, I remember I sent him the lettering script, and, you know, he liked it, you know, and he him and Roger did some edits on it, which, you know, was just makes me look better. And the one big thing Mark told me is, like, I'm going to add a lot more special effects. And I'm like, okay. And, you know, that's one of those things that modern comics have gotten away from is, I don't know if like, you know, word balloon or like thought balloons and special effects are seen as like, you know, too comic booky or something, but I don't know. I just think it's kind of dumb to like just dismiss something that a creator could use just because they think it's overused by someone else or isn't used correctly. You know, use what you got, man. So
I think that the real problem with that too is just when it comes to the internal narrative that, you know, we as human beings have, I don't think there's a medium that expresses it as well as comic books. Movies don't do it as well as comic books. Prose books don't do it as well as comic books. You can see what someone's thinking at the same time as they're, you know, doing something else. And that it's hard to do in anything else. And why would – I don't understand why, as a medium, many creators have turned their back on that, you know, that unique element of the medium. You know, that's how you compete with these things. You can't compete with the special effects of, say, a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, but you can do a Guardians of the Galaxy movie comic book and show the internal conflict and cognitive dissonance very simply.
Yeah, and I mean, I understand that's just, you know, the way people consume entertainment now. They're, you know, TV, you know, television drama now is, you know, season-long arcs and things like that. And comics kind of reflect that. And, you know, sometimes, you know, and I've been one to do it too, that, you know, this feels like it's written for the trade, that, you know, the stories, you know, that they're not written in such a way to be kind of like, they just feel like you're reading part of a bigger thing rather than being a satisfying chunk of entertainment just that stands on its own. And that's one of the things that with all the new Charlton Neo stuff, you know, some of it does kind of have, you know, has a I don't really feel like it's overly nostalgic or trying to be overly retro by any means, that it's just, hey, they're doing, you know, they're, you know, taking like a modern sensibility, but using some of these tricks and these tools that mainstream comics have kind of forgotten about. And, pardon me, that they've kind of forgotten about.
Oh, no problem.
And kind of giving you something kind of unique that, you know, I'm not just saying this because it's, you know, it's a comic series that I've got a story in, or I've got buddies that are putting out these comics that I want to support. I mean, I think these books are things that, you know, even, you know, modern readers of like DC and Marvel stuff would dig. And yeah, it's going to be a little different than maybe what you're used to, but, you know.
But that's Charles.
Different, you know, isn't bad. So, I mean, I can, you know, as like a comic book reader, I can read a story from the Golden Age and enjoy it just as much as something that came out last Wednesday, you know, and anything in between that, and that's the great thing about, especially like the Arrow, like, you know, there's two issues out so far, and no matter your taste in comics, there's got to be at least one thing in there that, like, really, like, speaks to you, I think. That, you know, if you're wanting something that's more of an old-fashioned feel, you know, that's there. If you're wanting something that's, you know, a little more, you know, dark and brooding, that's there. You know, something that's more lighthearted, that's there. That I really do think, like with the Charlton Neo stuff and the fact that they're not afraid to, hey, we're going to do a Western book, or, you know, we're going to do an anthology with different, you know, new, different original creations, that that they're taking kind of that Charlton spirit of let's just try anything, and which was kind of like the good and the bad thing about Charlton was the fact that the suits upstairs just didn't, in a lot of ways, they just didn't give a shit, you know. They just wanted to keep those presses running, you know, put some comics out,
right.
Sell, you know. They were cheap for them to make. And
it's more important to keep the presses
going.
It's the most important thing, keep the presses rolling.
And, you know, you can read some Charlton's comics, and you could tell when someone is just kind of, you know, going through the motions that, okay, another Western story, and, you know, here's the sheriff, and he's shot in the arm, you know. And they're just kind of, you know, going by the numbers. But then you'll get these gems through Charlton. And, I mean, you really saw him when, like, Victor Donna ran the company, and he did all the action hero stuff. And especially, like, yeah, when George Wildman and Nick Cootie were running things, and they're doing stuff like E-Man, which I've actually, earlier today, I just recently picked up a big bundle of the E-Mans that First put out that Joe Staton did. He started off with Martin Pascal writing it, and then Paul Kupperberg helping out, and then Joe on his own, and then the last few, Nick Cootie was able to come back and write some with him. But, you know, that all started with Charlton. And even with, like, their license books, you know, they let guys, you know, just kind of just do whatever. And, you know, Nick Cootie and John Byrne did some great stuff on Space 1999. And,
right.
Or like Korg, I mean, which was a show I barely remembered. It was a caveman show that Hanna-Barbera put out. And I'm sure to like the higher ups at Charlton's like, well, we have the rights to do this caveman comic. We'll give it to this guy in Texas. And he does these like just highly imaginative, whacked out stories. And they're just like amazing. And I really do see that spirit like carrying through, you know, 40 years later with this kind of revival of that Charlton spirit. And, you know, it's, you know, having that spirit to me is more important than necessarily like, oh, you know, having to use this character or that character, just kind
right.
of that, like, hey, let's try anything sort of deal. So I'm, as a like contributor, I'm really proud to be part of like, you know, of this stuff. But as a fan, you know, even if I, you know, hadn't written a story for the Charlton Arrow and hope to do more with these guys, just as a, like a comics fan, like, hey, this is something new and different that, I really want to be part of and see what happens. So.
Absolutely, and I think they have captured the vibe of the old Charlton comics. And you talked a little bit about, you know, one of the knocks on the old Charltons being a lesser, you know, lower production value. But I think somehow that added to its charm on occasion, not unlike Extreme Championship Wrestling in the mid '90s, where somehow it had a gritty underground feel, like you were part of a special club that nobody else was. Like a lot of people, when I was in school, war comics were being phased out, but I lived in Arkansas, so we still liked war comics. And we would pick them up from the flea market, and I would usually get Fighting Army or Fighting Marines because they had this, you know, this underground club feel.
Yeah, or, you know, I was comparing it to, like, to somebody, some of the Charlton stuff, to, like, kind of like the companies like American International Pictures that did, you know, really low budget, kind of just churned out movies for like the drive-in circuit. And yeah,
right.
You know, some of them were, they would kind of like just kind of, oh, well, we're doing another biker picture. So they kind of just follow the numbers of, you know, how you do a plot for this. But then, you know, you got to remember, you know, Roger Corman gave, you know, Martin Scorsese and John Milius and all, you know, and George Lucas, you know, a lot of like super talented like filmmakers got their start working on stuff like this. And, you know, and like your Jerome earlier and his ode to Joe Staten. I mean, Charlton was an avenue for someone like Joe Staten to like really hone his craft. And, you know, Joe Staten, John Byrne, Nick Cootie,
Paul Kupperberg,
you know, Mike Zeck, all these guys that started out at Charlton that, yeah, if you look at their, you know, it looks a little rough, you know, they're really early stuff, but, like art wise, but like, if you look at like some of the first few things Joe Staten did when he first got to Charlton, and then, you know, by the time the E-Man came around, you know, it was like leaps and bounds, and he's like, and that's kind of something that's kind of, you know, there's not that proving ground anymore for creators to men and women in comics to kind of feel their way, you know, find their footing as a creator. And that was, you know, another benefit of the Charlton books, the fact that, you know, you would have, you know, newcomers, you know, needing to get that experience. They could have that experience there. Or, you know, established guys like Steve Ditko, who, you know, basically walked away from like the biggest character in comics, you know, for whatever reasons he chose to, which, you know, you got to respect him for, you know, sticking with doing what he felt was right. And he went back and did his thing at Charlton. And, you know, the legend goes, you know, he liked working for him because, you know, they didn't pay as good, but they paid on time and they left him alone. And,
and that was more important to him than making more money and having to compromise with Stan Lee at the time, I guess. That's the way it's explained to me.
Yeah. And, you know, and that kind of, in a way, kind of brings me back to this new Charlton stuff that, you know, someone like Roger McKenzie, who's always been like a super talented writer and, you know, I grew up reading a lot of his stuff. And then, you know, he's been away from comics for quite a long time. And, you know, he comes to this and like people are starting like, hey, Roger McKenzie, I remember him. And, you know, they kind of look at it maybe just, you know, out of curiosity, but they're coming back because, you know, the stuff's good. You know,
yeah,
or,
conversely, oh, go on. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, and then like, you know, someone like Sandy Carruthers, who like put out some great stuff and, you know, his career took him in, you know, in different directions and, you know, he's coming back, he's doing comics for him. Or even guys like Paul Kupperberg and Chuck Dixon, who are like established guys that were still, you know, Paul Kupperberg, you know, he's the guy that killed Archie.
And, right.
You know, he's a guy that, you know, he's got a great body of work, and Chuck Dixon has a great body of work, but they're, you know, and I don't know those guys, you know, personally enough that I really can't speak for them, but I can just kind of imagine looking from their, imagine if I look from their viewpoint, they're like, hey, you know, creatively being able to just kind of do your thing has got to be pretty appealing. That, I mean, you know, but in like Paul's case, you know, he's got a, you know, he's playing with Archie's toys, you know, the company's toys, and he's, you know, doing his thing for them. But, you know, with the Charlton stuff, he gets to do what he wants. The only, you know, the only person he has to answer to is himself. So,
right.
It's just,
and that's just, you know, that's the kind of an underlying theme of Charlton. Like you said, it's, you know, they can do what they want, not have to answer to, you know, to being part of a higher corporate structure. And I don't know Paul Kupperberg or Chuck Dixon, you know, incredibly personally either, but I can say we've had Paul on the show before, in another Charlton show, and we're going to have him on again. He's more than open to returning. good friend of the show, but he did link our shows to the Neo Charlton website. He's always very nice when we talk. Chuck Dixon, I think, is the most underrated Punisher writer ever. And when I wrote an article over at my 90s comics website, theunspokendecade.com, everybody check it out. He actually, you know, I wrote an article about a Punisher story. He wrote and said it was the best Punisher story ever, in my opinion. He actually came over, it came to his attention, and he commented on it, and he was, you know, very nice. So in my dealings with the men, they've been nothing but nice. And I think it's awesome to get guys like that and Sandy Carruthers back, but also another continuation of the Charlton legacy is, as you said, a path for new talent, guys who want to be in the comic book business, to get in as the, you know, Charlton Neo. It's one of the few projects that actually is accepting unsolicited submissions, including a few from yours truly, Dean Compton. Full disclosure, everybody. I don't want to be accused of not having full disclosure.
Well, full disclosure, I'm working on a submission for I've got a local guy here in Des Moines who's a really talented artist named Nick Pendleton, and we've been batting around ideas for another Charlton thing that hopefully when we're ready to send it to the powers that be, that perhaps I'll make my triumphant return to the Charlton era. So we'll see.
Sweet.
But yeah, and the thing is, I mean, it's, you know, it's people doing what they want to do and, you know, enjoying doing it. And they're bringing things to comics that, you know, it's something new that's out there that, you know, not quite like what's there currently. And, you know, I've got a pretty broad range of tastes as far as like comics goes. So, you know, so I'll never disparage anyone. I, you know, personally, I don't read much of anything from Marvel or DC, you know, and it's just, it's all subjective. I can't say whether it's good or bad. You know, I'm just, for me at this point in time, it, as a reader, it doesn't appeal to me. You know, apparently someone is reading it, that they're publishing it. And,
right.
You know, God bless them, but, you know, if whether you, you know, like that stuff or you don't like that stuff, you like something different, the Charlton Neo stuff is well worth your attention. And, in fact, I was showing off, the two issues. I showed them to some friends, and one of them kind of looked at the cover price of the Charlton, the first issue, and he's like, that's kind of high, and because it was like $6.99, and I'm like, well, yeah, but it's the size of like two regular comics, and those regular comics are going to cost you $4 each.
Right.
And then, so actually, if you bought this one comic instead of two Marvel comics, you'd save $1. So,
and then on top of that, at least you get complete stories in this one. You know, like we talked about earlier, a lot of those Marvels or DCs you get now, they're writing for the trade. If you drop that $6.99 on the Charlton Arrow number one, you know, several stories, each of which had a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah, and it kind of reminded me of when you were a kid and you talk your mom into buying one of those big variety packs of small boxes of cereals.
That, right.
You know, that, you know, maybe not everybody likes Apple Jacks, but there's somewhere in that pack, there's a cereal that you're going to like. And that's the way that these Charlton anthology books are going to like, you know, there's going to be something in there for you for just about anybody. So.
Absolutely. And you can get the Charlton Arrow at MortonTodd.com. All issues are still available. Number three with your Vengeance Squad story is going to come out. And I think it's going to be shipped later this month, right?
That's, I believe so. And, yeah, it was kind of amazing that, you know, I saw the cover and I'm seeing, like, Pat Boyette, Joe Gill, Jim Aparo, you know, Roger McKinney, Sandy Carruthers, you know, all these, like, great names. And then, like, you know, mine got wedged in there somehow. So, like, hey, this is cool.
Dave Noe also on there, because last time we talked about Arrow contributors, apparently Mort and I mentioned every one of them except him. So I don't want to leave him out this time.
Oh, yeah, Dave's a good guy. Dave was giving me, jokingly, of course, but was giving me a hard time about, I think it was Dave, about Iowa being boring. And, like, well, it's boring, but, you know, I seem to score a lot of, like, really awesome, cheap Charlton comics for pretty cheap, so.
I'll take boring, I guess. How could any place that had the Field of Dreams and the video game capital of the world be that boring?
Yeah, and we used to lead the nation in crystal meth, but I don't think we do that anymore.
Well, you know, you got a lot of stiff competition, you know, in California, Missouri, Arkansas. My home state's of Missouri and Arkansas, you know, definitely bring up the competition when it comes to crystal meth, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I'm joking around, but you know, that's another cool thing about the Arrow page is, you know, guys can kind of like tease each other and no one gets upset. That's what,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of what's kind of kept me away from like really getting into any sort of like fan communities online, because they all seem to eventually implode in a bunch of like, you know, personal squabbles and stuff. And, you know, Fester could probably, you know, elaborate a little more, because I know he's had to police it, you know, very sparingly here and there. But I mean, everyone on there just seems like really super cool and super supportive. And, you know, if someone new comes on and asks a question, you know, that we've covered before, no one gets upset. They just answer that question. It's super inclusive. And, you know, that spirit's kind of carrying itself over into like the comics. So.
Absolutely. The spirit of that page is amazing. I tell everybody it is the best page. You know, a lot of it is for the reasons you stated. If somebody new comes, not only does nobody get upset with them for asking the same question, you know, a question that might have already been asked, everybody just answers it. Like, I've answered questions on that page. You've answered questions on that page. Everybody's just like, oh, yeah, sure. This is what we know about it. And then, you know, you defer to people who might know more. Like, if I'll answer a question about something, I'll be like, but don't take my, you know, don't take this as gospel. Fester would know more about it. And then all of a sudden Fester shows up and confirms or scratches out the part I got wrong. You know, and if anybody does chastise a new guy for asking a question, there's like seven people there to be like, hey, lay off. He's, you know, this guy joined yesterday.
Yeah. And, I mean, you don't see that happen. And last spring I got to meet Paul Kupperberg at the Planet Comic Con in Kansas City. That he was there, and he had him and Rick Stacy, who's a local artist, great guy. He's a local artist down there in the Kansas City area, and they're doing some stuff with the Arrow. And they kind of had a Charlton panel that I went to, and we, you know, talked about Charlton and stuff. And you know, there were some other Arrowheads in the audience, and it's just kind of cool that, you know, you see guys there on the page that will like, hey, I'm going to be at such and such con, and, you know, it'd be kind of neat to know that, you know, you can find another like-minded, you know, comics fan at a show or something through that page, because, you know, I've got my buddies that I'll go to cons with and stuff, but they're not, you know, and we have common ground on some things, but that, you know, they might not be into Charlton, but, you know, through that page, I've met all kinds of cool people and, you know, other fans and, you know, guys that have created comics I grew up reading and guys that do comics that I dig now, and it's just great.
Yeah, I'm hoping to catch up with you next year in Kansas City if it all works out, because I'm going to go see my Royals, you know, in Kansas City next year. We're supposed to this year, but just a bunch of stuff got in the way. And I've noticed that, too, that, you know, whenever somebody's going to be at a con, they wind up with four or five, six people. If you're not a part of the Charlton Arrow community, you're really missing out. If you're not ordering the Charlton Arrow, you got to go over to MortonTodd.com right now and check it out. Is Holy Terror going to be available through MortonTodd.com, or is it going to be distributed through normal mechanisms, or both? I guess they're not necessarily mutually exclusive.
Probably the plan now is definitely it's going to be, you know, Mort's putting it out through Comic Fix, and we're probably going to initially, you know, offer it through his page and through like Indie Planet. That's where, like, if anyone's interested now, you can get all three issues of the Holy Terror, the original series. You can get those through Indie Planet, and you know, it's kind of the sort of thing with like music. Sometimes you have to, the people, your audience, if they really want it, they'll seek it out. I mean, you know, I remember
absolutely
growing, you know, I remember growing up, you know, before I could drive, like the closest comic shop was like 25 miles away. So it was like a big deal to be able to, you know, if my mom took us to like the shopping mall on the south end of Des Moines, Iowa, you know, I had to walk like a quarter mile up the road to go to a comic shop. And, you know, or, you know, I'm old enough. I remember, you know, buying comics, you know, off a spinner rack, you know, or off a newsstand, and it was like really sporadic. And, but like, you know, these days, like with the internet, you know, you can find anything you want. And so
right.
I, you know, I think, you know, for like an independent book, like the Holy Terror, I'm probably going to, you know, reach for the audience that would really like that comic. We're going to, our chances probably are better to sell it through like Mort's website or through Indie Planet or whatever than getting like swallowed up in the gigantic Diamond catalog, you know, where, yeah, I'm, you know, there's like a postage stamp size image and a small little blurb in this like 500 page catalog. And, you know, I'm, you know, by the time that, you know, most comic retailers, you know, that, you know, they're trying to, you know, support themselves with a comic shop, and they've got to get the stuff they know that can sell. And, you know, by the time they get through that first half of the catalog with, you know, Marvel and DC and Image and Dark Horse and everyone, you know, and they've got all their orders, you know, their budget's about, you know, tapped out to not be able to like really take a chance on some of this, like, you know, indie stuff. So, you know, it's kind of a gamble for them. So if you, if we go through Diamond, you know, our chances aren't really going to be that much greater than, you know, if we're offering it, you know, letting people know where they can order it. And, you know, it's a lot easier for me just to, you know, spend a little bit of time online and look for those comics, you know, stuff like the Charlton Arrow, but, you know, other things that kind of are different that appeal to me that, you know, I can just, you know, order and have sent to my home. So, I guess in a roundabout way, yeah, we're going to offer it through Mort's site. And, I've got some ideas of a couple other places I might try, maybe to try to reach like wrestling fans that aren't necessarily also comics fans. We'll see.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think it has a built-in Lucha Libre audience. If you find a way to reach out to those fans, I think they're going to be, you know, I think they need it up. But, you know, I mean, I can't wait to get my hands on a copy. Can't wait to see the Charlton Arrow number 3. Can't, you know, and this is all going to be available through MortonTodd.com. Jason, what else you got to talk with us about tonight? I mean, had a great time talking with you. I think we might have covered all the bases, my friend.
Yeah, the only other thing that thing I'd like to plug is besides a Holy Terror trade coming out next year, I'm also working on a graphic novel with another super talented Midwestern artist named Greg Paulson, and I'm writing this graphic novel for him, for this character he created called Ironclad. And it's coming out in 2015 from a company called Committed Comics. And it's totally different than like the Holy Terror, which I've always kind of described as a horror themed wrestling action comic. Ironclad is kind of an all ages sort of, comic about a kid that gets a hold of a giant robot and fights monsters. So it's kind of appeals
always
to like
fun.
The sort of, yeah, so, you know, fans of like the Iron Giant or Ben 10 or things like that, that you can look forward to that in 2015. And there's an Ironclad, that's all one word, Ironclad fan page on Facebook that if anyone's interested, you can do a search for it on there and see it. And you can see a lot of Greg's like incredible art, and it's going to be, it was originally going to be a mini series, and Greg hooked up with the guys that Committed, and they're like, no, we want to do it as like a standalone big graphic novel. So we've got to like expand it, the story, and which is great, because then it just gets to write more scenes for Greg to draw of a giant robot fighting monsters, which,
fight monsters,
you know,
hell yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun, and it's just, you know, another thing that, you know, kind of scratches a different itch for me as a creator that I'm really loving. You know, it's different from Holy Terror. It's different from Vengeance Squad. You know, it's different from, you know, some of the other stuff I've done, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And I recently talked to a friend of mine that I went to school with. His son, one of his sons who's in grade school, they have a very strong writing program at their school, and they had different people that did different types of writing come talk to the kids. And I talked to the kids about doing comics and explained to them, you know, kind of what it was, like, you know, what I did and how I did it. And they were really interested to see like a sort of kind of writing where you kind of had to work with someone else. And there were several kids that, you know, and I told them about some of the stuff I was working on, and I talked to them about Ironclad, because it was kind of, it's an all ages book that it, you know, it's going to appeal to like the 8-year-old, but it'll appeal to like the 30-year-old, you know. I'm really excited about it, and it seemed like people were really kind of responding to that, so I'm hoping that's going to be a success too. So,
well, I can't wait to take a gander at it. Next year from Committed Comics, we'll have Ironclad. In fact, I just went to Facebook and sent a request to join the fan page group, because I don't want to miss out on anything. I'm not going to miss Charlton Arrow number 3. I've already got my copy ordered, and I'm definitely not going to miss the trade of Holy Terror. Jason, I just want to thank you for being such a great guest tonight, taking a little time out of your busy schedule to come chat with us about your career and Charlton Comics.
Well, thank you, Dean. It's always a pleasure, and it's always fun to listen and to be on the show, and hope to do it again.
Hey, we're definitely going to have you again. I really appreciate it. Next week, guys, we're going to have WWE pay-per-view coverage of Night of Champions. You'll want to tune in for that. And Christopher Fox will probably be leading the show, because I have a family thing that has come up that I may not be able to host. If I can get here at all, though, I definitely will. But one way or another, you won't miss out on Night of Champions coverage. This is Dean Compton for Compton After Dark. You got to be here next week, because you never know what's going to happen.